Welcome to episode 16 of Frank Reactions, the show where we help you profit from the digital era through better customer experiences online and off. I recently joined the CXPA, the Consumer Experience Professionals Association, and was lucky enough to be able to sit in on a webinar done by Reginald Chapman, who is the Senior Director of Customer Experience at Bloom Energy. And what he had to say struck me so strongly that I immediately asked him to come on this show. And that's who we've got as our guest today. What he pointed out is that often customer experience folks are seen as, to be honest, a hassle by a lot of the internal departments. All we're doing is asking them to do more work and make our priorities theirs when they've got enough to deal with. Reginald had some really, really smart ideas about how to get them on your side. He's very soft-spoken, and the audio connection wasn't the greatest. We had to do it by phone, but it is worth the effort. Enjoy.
I am responsible for a couple of things. Actually, I call it my day job and my night job. My day job at Bloom Energy here is really traditional customer care in terms of being able to take and drive issues that customers are asking us about relative to their use of our product. As you can imagine, with most any company, especially technology company, there will be phone calls or emails going, hey, listen, can you answer this question or that question, or what does this mean, and can you help me with that, et cetera. So it's really a standard customer care kind of an operation that exists. And then my second job, again, sort of the night job, as I call it, is to develop and execute an overall customer experience strategy that's based upon all touch points with the customer, not just customer care, from sales to construction to service, as well as customer care and other facets of the organization. You know, what are those touch points like, and what can we do to improve them so as to improve the overall customer experience? That's really my role. One is more tactical day-to-day, and another one is more strategic and more all-encompassing.
Okay. And so how long have you been working sort of in this whole area of customer experience?
Roughly 10 years now. I started out working on specific customer projects and then migrated into more of a traditional CE role where we're looking at customer experience metrics and figuring out, you know, things that need to be done to try to improve experience at particular touch points. My previous role was at did that at Cisco, then I moved over to SanDisk, and then most recently, over the last 6 months, I've been in Bloom Energy. So those have been my three stops over the last 10 years where I've been in this role.
That's great. Obviously, one of the biggest challenges that people in customer experience face is trying to get buy-in from the rest of the organization for things that they want to change. So I was really intrigued by some of the ideas that you had about ways to get buy-in. So to start with, obviously metrics are important, but you had commented the other day that there can be a lot of resistance to setting up new metrics and measuring new metrics. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes, I wasn't really advocating only one set or type of metrics in particular. What I meant to say was that you need to evolve. In other words, as your program matures, there are different things that are important from one stage to another.
Mm-hmm.
In the beginning stage, when you are just bringing up your program or you're trying to get resources or perhaps even new resources, the only thing you have, especially if it's a startup, are industry metrics, right? You only have, here's what would happen if you were to make an investment that you would improve, you know, profitability and improve revenue and increase or cut costs, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to have those conversations, but since you are starting things up, you can't say what will actually happen at your company.
Mm-hmm.
And so just to justify it, you have to say, here's what the industry claims and to be true based upon longitudinal studies. And that makes a lot of sense, and people get that. And the reason that resonates is because people understand intuitively that there is value in customer experience. And now, the trap, though, is that what a customer experience leader might tend to do is go, okay, well, here's how I justify the existence or the investment in the program. I suppose I need to continue to track those metrics to make sure that what I said 6 months ago is really coming true right now. And then you get into this trap of trying to prove that those macro-level metrics apply very specifically to your company. And then and my point was that that's just a trap. Move on from that.
And why is that a trap?
because it's almost impossible to do, right? It's virtually impossible to be able to claim that one program or this area of focus had this very specific impact on one of those top-level metrics, right? In other words,
because there's so many confounding variables.
Exactly, there's so many variables, right? Your pricing could change, market demand could change, customer usage could change, all sorts of things that have to do with, that have nothing to do with the customer experience program. All that could be happening at the same time, or it could not be. It's just that it's virtually impossible to prove that by saying, okay, these variables stayed the same, so therefore the only thing that changed was the investment in customer experience, so therefore that's why our profitability improved.
Right.
Even if you could do that, then the other people who have a stake in saying that the work that they did is really what moved the needle would get defensive about that. It's just a lose-lose proposition. Meaning, it would be difficult to do. B, if you thought you could do it, you'd have to just spend a lot of time justifying it. And then C, even if you could justify it, you end up making unnecessary enemies. So it's just a complete waste of time, in my opinion.
That's a great point.
Yeah, once you make the business case initially, that's enough. Everybody gets it. Everybody understands that Farsha says this, or Timke says that, or Bain says that, or, any other number of different consultants can have these studies that tell you that it makes sense to do it. And so, okay, you made the case. We believe in you. Here's your money. Go hire people. Go hire programs. Go bring this thing on board. Leave it alone.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so then phase two, what leaders tend to do is go, oh, crap. I can't figure out how this thing directly impacts profitability or revenue or bottom line. I can't do that. It's too hard. I can't get finance to support me on making it happen. I know it. I'll just start chopping the fact that we improved CSAT or we improved loyalty or we improved NPS. And again, that works for a season. That first year, that probably works because people hadn't seen it before and they go, oh, this is pretty cool. Now we know what the customer thinks, blah, 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 et cetera. But then what happens is that people, the functional leaders begin to understand that, okay, I now have to do some work to move the needle on these metrics. And guess what? I won't get any of the credit.
Mm-hmm.
The customer loyalty guys are going to get all the credit because those are the metrics that are going to be moving. That NPS goes from, this number to that number, or loyalty goes from this number to that number.
Right.
Well, I guess who gets the credit? The customer loyalty guy, because those are his metrics. Or his or her metrics, and you go, so the first year, when everybody's excited about it, and the DPs are like, oh, this is the best thing since sliced bread, we've never even seen this before, the customer loyalty guy is riding, and then everybody gets behind it, and goes, yeah, we better get behind this and make this thing successful. For a season, for year one, that works just fine. But year two, year three, when you go back again and go, hey guys, we need to try to improve success, I can go, why am I doing this? Well, I'm not getting any credit, but I'm doing all the work.
Right. Yeah.
So that, again, it's important that those metrics are in place because that's the way to know whether or not things are really working. But that cannot be the be-all, end-all. Let's go from industry metrics to, loyalty and CSAT metrics to, okay, very good. Let's get aligned to business goals and business metrics and show how the two are interrelated on a regular basis. And so that way, you build sustainability because you have folks that are working on it from functions and cross functions that you're helping them be successful, making them look good. And B, they become advocates for you. They help, they go, yeah, this is a great program. And these guys are a great partner and they're having an impact on the business. And so at that point, your program becomes sustainable. It becomes impactful. And then you have folks that see you as a champion. Versus someone who's coming in who's asking to do more work.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about what sorts of metrics would currently be collected by the different divisions that you could then leverage to help them and help the customer experience issues. What are the sorts of metrics where you could have that shared objective?
Yeah, I think, again, each functional team has their own goals, and at the end of the day, they all have these goals that have been handed down to them, year over year.
Okay.
And so each function has their own things. If you talk to the quality group, they're going to have, what is the, number of, let's say, how fast can they, how well are they doing in terms of root cause analysis of failures? As an example, I'm just thinking about like a hardware.
Yep.
A failure that may occur. And then you say, look, let's get aligned to that. Let's focus on those products that our customers care most about. Oh, and by the way, here's what our feedback says. They care about these three products. These other two products, they don't really care that much about. So if you, you know, if you don't improve your root cause analysis on those so fast, don't worry about it. Focus your efforts here. And they go, ah.
Right.
So now I'm actually doing work that has the most impact versus just working blindly.
That's really interesting. I had an interview a little while ago with Kelly Harper, who's in charge of customer experience at BMO Financial, and she was saying that they had discovered that the things that, for instance, the staff thought it was really, really important that they revise their mortgage application forms, and the research they did with the customers found the forms weren't really the issue. The issue was the conversations getting into the point of needing to sign forms, that they wanted to have more empathy and understanding and information from the rep. So it was a classic example of the sort of thing you're talking about, where they were focusing on the wrong thing, and bringing in the customer experience person helped them focus on the right things.
Exactly. Precisely. And you know what? That's what they want to do, because everyone has limited resources. And if you're able to bring to the bear and say, look, here's what customers really care about. Here's what they really want. Here's where you should focus your limited resources. Not only will the numbers improve, but you're going to be able to deploy your resources to areas that your customers most, you know, care most about, and drive metrics that are really important, as opposed to just sort of peanut buttering your resources across things that perhaps they don't care about.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's a good example for one area. So the quality control.
Another one that I talk a lot about, because that's where my focus is going to be here in my current role, is how to make sure that we have a robust referral program so that we can help the sales guys close deals faster.
Okay.
And so right now it's a little bit scattered. The reason it's a little bit scattered because we're not exactly sure, you know, what is the sentiment. Who would be the most likely customers to provide or the best referrals? To do that, you know, we need to understand where they, you know, what their sentiment is, how loyal they are, how likely they are to recommend, things like that. And so we need to provide the information so we can methodically go after the right customers at the right time.
Mm-hmm.
So again, this is a real impact on the business right away for both marketing and sales. That's just a great boom.
Yeah.
Some other things I've talked about, again, is partnering with HR on employee engagement, knowing that if you have more highly engaged employees, and those employees are less likely to leave, your churn goes down, your satisfaction goes up, it's all those things sort of work together. It's one of several factors, but nevertheless, it's an important one.
Yep.
And again, if you can help the HR team be successful, that's great. And you, by doing this as well, HR teams, they feel like they're only internal. Sometimes if you can connect them to the external, to the customer, it provides them a higher degree of leverage as well in terms of being able to get stuff done.
It's so brilliant. I love this because it's just so sensible. That way you're getting their buy-in because you're helping them solve their problems, and it's a happy coincidence that solving their problems helps you accomplish your goals.
Absolutely. And, you know, this can be applied to virtually every functional team. I'll give you another example. If you were to, one of the things that we discovered and some research we had done before was customers weren't all that concerned, strangely as it may seem. Well, especially when you're negotiating pricing, generally speaking, you are dealing with sometimes vendor management folks. Their job is just simply to squeeze out. If you ask for $10, their job is to just get you down to $9. Right? They don't really, really care what their end number is. Their metric is how much can you reduce the price. And so for them, the actual price you end up at is not all that important. In other words, if you started at $12 and got down to 11, it'd be the same thing as starting at 10 and got down to 9. For them, it's a percentage reduction.
Mm-hmm.
So what we discovered from that is we actually had, and so this for the finance people, they're like, we're able to find this out, that it's not the price itself that they all that concerned about. Turns out what they're concerned about is the process by which we negotiate. In other words, how quickly we can get them to a particular price at a particular point in time, and then the process for how we pass documents back and forth, how quickly we respond, and then what is the nature and demeanor of the negotiations themselves. In other words, they care about the process. The price itself, they didn't really care that much about.
That's interesting.
But yeah, just by making a few simple tweaks to the process, responding faster to their initial offer, right? So we would spend days and days and ruminating on, how do we respond to this, and et cetera. And because at the end of the day, we almost always end up where we need to be with the customer.
So how did you find that out? Like, how did you realize that it wasn't the numbers themselves that really mattered?
It's just from the customer feedback. There's one thing to get the scores where we ask them these questions. There's another thing to get the verbatim. And the verbatim kept coming back. Listen, it's your process. They didn't complain. If we had, 20 complaints about, let's say, pricing, there might be two who said your prices were too high. The other 18 were like, hey, your process is such a hassle.
Right.
Going back and forth to you 20 times, blah, blah, blah. And so what we discovered is it's not the price itself. Mm-hmm. And so we were all hung up on the price when we should actually just been focusing. And that's what we did. We began focusing more on the process, making sure the customer had a little bit more visibility into how the process works and why we were set at particular levels and why we were, by doing that. Oh, and also being able to give the account teams more leverage at the point of the deal making versus always having to go back to corporate. Those were some basic things we did.
Yeah.
The process got a lot better. The scores went up, and then prices, the actual margins improved. and it was tricky because it wasn't pricing. It was the process by which we were negotiating. So by dealing with finance on pricing, by dealing with HR on employee engagement, marketing with leads, sales on revenue, and if you can get there, that's an evolution of a program. Most programs go to phase one where they do the market stuff. Then they go to phase two where they do, these are my, look how proud I am of my NPS scores and blah, blah, blah. But until you get to phase three, that level of maturity, you are going to be seen as this extra little group on the side, comes around once a year with some scores, and make it work for us. Or worse yet, I saw this happen at Salesforce. They were simply using customer loyalty scores as like marketing messaging. They would take the scores and they would just create a marketing collateral around it. Right. And then, hey, look what our scores are. And so the other teams had no respect for those scores, had no respect for the process. They weren't using the data or the information to do anything actionable.
Right.
Because it came to be seen as a marketing program versus a change management program to actually have an impact on the business.
It almost sounds then like if somebody were coming in newly to a customer experience role or creating a new department within a company, perhaps the most important way for them to start is actually by visiting with people from each of the other's departments and finding out what their goals and objectives are, and then thinking back to how can we relate this.
You know what? That is an excellent suggestion. That wasn't what I was proposing because I never thought of it that way, but you're absolutely right. if we're going to be impactful over the next 3 to 5 years, why don't we design a program from the get-go that we know has an impact on the business right away, as opposed to doing it the traditional way, which is, again, from the outside in. I think what you just said is actually very insightful. That didn't even occur to me.
Well, thank you.
Because I kind of saw it as a one way that you have to start from this angle and work your way down to this point as an evolution. When in fact, if you were to design it like that from the beginning, you'd probably save yourself a lot of problems. So that's a good point.
What barriers do you still find, or challenges do you still find, in terms of getting that internal buy-in and cooperation?
What's in it for me? You have to.
Right.
You have to. That's one thing. Again, many of us in our industry, we fail to do. It's always a sort of a, we have to do this, we should be doing this, et cetera. And we fail to think about, what's in it for the everyday regular employee. It's easy to just kind of skip that and just kind of just start launching it. Oh, I'll work on that on the back end. But bottom line is that's the resistance from just everyday individuals who are not even sure what it means and why do we need to be doing this and hey, isn't this just a flavor of the month? You have to overcome those challenges every single time. And that's why, now that you said it, that's why your suggestion actually makes a ton more sense. I really like what you just said.
Cool. Is there anything that you wish I'd asked you that I haven't?
No, I thought this was a very good conversation in terms of being able to even think through a little bit better what I was even trying to articulate, and the fact that you were able to bring something to the conversation that's really on point about work your way backwards as opposed to start with the end in mind versus starting from how it should be done always. So I think we're good here. I'm sort of appreciate having a chance to talk through this with you.
One of the great things about interviewing people is sometimes between the two of you, you come up with something even better than either of you came up with individually. Clearly, that's what happened here. Taking Reginald's idea of how to get other departments buying into your vision and how you as a customer experience practitioner can help other departments, I came up with the idea of saying, hey, why not start that way? If you're setting up a new customer experience unit within your organization, start by going to all those other folks, find out what they measure, what's important to them, and how can you help them while also ultimately helping your customer experience metrics. That's all for today. If you have not heard the other episodes in this show, I strongly recommend that you go check them out. The address is frankreactions.com/show. Or, of course, you can find us on iTunes or Stitcher. This is still a fairly new podcast, and so I'd be super grateful if you would go to iTunes and or Stitcher and give us a little review. It would really help other people find out about this show. And if you, like me, want to make this world a better place in terms of customer experience, we all want to spread the word. Thanks so much for your help. If you want to reach me directly, you can always send me an email, temasinmarketinga@frankreactions.com, or my Twitter handle is simply @temafrank, T-E-M-A-F-R-A-N-K, and you can find me on LinkedIn and a whole bunch of other social media. You can also telephone me anytime, 1-866-544-9262. That's a toll-free number. And that's all for today. I thought I was going to make this podcast bi-weekly, but there's so much great content I'm getting that actually I've decided I will go back to a weekly format. So you should hear another episode next week. Bye.